Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal, talking all things MSU and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. We're coming to you on location from Nashville, the SEC basketball tournament. The Rebels still alive. Logan, getting ready to head out.
I am, yeah. We're doing this podcast sitting across the table from each other. We rarely get to do this. It feels like we're in a studio.
That's right. All this technology around us. We're getting it done, though, folks. Ole Miss back in action tonight in the late game again. Death, taxes, and Ole Miss in the late game at the SEC tournament. Those are things you can count on. The Rebels will take on number 3 seed Arkansas tonight after winning their opening game against Missouri 86-74. And as late games go, that one wasn't that late. I've seen a lot worse. They actually got started earlier, so we were able to get a little bit in the print edition and a lot more online at djournal.com. Before we move on, folks, I want to remind you about some other podcasts to be on the lookout for. Check out The Memo, our news podcast, All Things Northeast Mississippi. That's from Brad Locke and Derek Russell. And be sure to check out Prep Rally with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan coming to you every Wednesday. Let's go back a minute. The Memo, that comes out every Wednesday and Friday. So check out those guys there. Logan and I are with you here every Thursday or Friday. On Friday this week, kind of depends on what's going on. Logan, let's talk Mississippi State first. We'll come back to the Rebels and talk a little bit more about Arkansas coming up tonight. But you have that situation where you've beaten a team twice, and even though LSU has struggled this season, there's a little bit of, will they finally put it together? There were some games at the end of the season where LSU played a lot better, actually knocked off Tennessee and Baton Rouge.
Almost beat Georgia.
Very, very close to Georgia. And, you know, actually I had the lead in that game with like 5 seconds left, and they let J.J. Frazier drive the length of the floor and tie the game and send it to overtime. So they were playing better at the end of the year, and State had to find a way to not only win a third time against LSU, but win for like the second time in 3 or 4 days.
Exactly, and you know they just played them on Saturday, so they didn't have to do much scouting for that game. But obviously, beating a team for the third time is something that's very hard to do, and Mississippi State did that. I mean, they obviously you heard the rumors swirling about Johnny Jones's job. Future, and you know they had that distraction, I'm sure, and you know obviously that could be motivation. You really don't know how teams are going to respond to that. Obviously Missouri responded to that during that first game on Wednesday, right, as well. So you know, State had that, but State played incredibly well that first day on Wednesday. Ended up beating LSU 79-52, shot 47%. Hit 11 threes in that ball game, and Quindary Weatherspoon had 19 points. Tyson Carter came off the bench and played extremely well against LSU in that first game. Scored 18 points in 20 minutes in that first game. Hit 4 threes and kind of lifted Mississippi State in that first half. And then Xavier Stapleton came off the bench and played well in that second half for Mississippi State. So it was kind of the Tyson Carter show in the first half, Xavier Stapleton in the second, and then Quindary Weatherspoon was kind of steady the whole game through, and Mississippi State scored 51 points off their bench against LSU, and they really needed it because 3 of their starters didn't even hit a field goal in that ball game. Schneider Harrard, Mario Kegler, and I.J. Reddy failed to hit a field goal in that game, so they needed some points off the bench, and they got it, and they ended up winning that first game. Turned around, had to play Alabama for the third time this year on Thursday, and Alabama had beaten Mississippi State. That was actually the first game of the season in conference play in Starkville. They won that game by 10. Mississippi State goes to Tuscaloosa. I think they lost that game by 9 or so. But, you know, they were within striking distance, and Alabama hit some late free throws in both of those games to kind of extend things out and go ahead and win those games. But it were a pretty close battle in both of those. But the third time, it wasn't. Alabama took control of that ball game and shot the ball really well. They shot 47%. Helped Mississippi State to 2 of 12 from three-point range in that ball game. Like I said, they hit 11 threes Wednesday against LSU. Only hit two against Alabama, and that was kind of the difference. Still had a tough game from Schneider Harad and Mario Kegler. Neither one of those guys hit a field goal the entire tournament in two games. So they needed more point production from those two guys. They didn't get it. Tyson Carter played well again, 13 points off the bench. Quindary Weatherspoon scored 12. Eric Coleman scored 10. But it just wasn't enough. I guess the only positive you can pull out of this season for Mississippi State, where they were the youngest team in the country, they got a lot of experience returning. They only lose IJ Reddy off of this team. And they finished 16-16 as the youngest team in the country. That's the first time since the 11-12 season that they haven't had a losing season. So even though they finished 500 this year, it still wasn't a losing season, so they were able to get that done. So, you know, right now, you know, Mississippi State, you know, it goes into the offseason. They've got a good recruiting class coming in. Garrison Brooks, Keyshawn Frazell, Nick Weatherspoon, they're depending a lot on those guys. And then they have Abdullah Du coming in, the guy, 6'11" center that wasn't eligible this year. Really helped them. He was able to start practicing with the team in late December. They said he looked really, really good in practice, gave Mississippi State some good looks in practice, but obviously they could have really used him on the floor to kind of help spell Schneider Harad, Eric Coleman, and E.J. Datcher in the post, and they just didn't have that guy, that big physical presence in the post, and that's something they're hoping Abdullah Du gives them next year along with Garrison Brooks.
You know, I was impressed earlier this season with Lamar Peters. A lot of youth on this team right now, but how did he play at the end of the season, and what do you see his role being next year?
He kind of petered out. You know,
no pun intended.
Excuse the pun, but yeah, he sort of did. I think, you know, the freshman wall, you hear about that so much, Parrish. I think that and the injuries just started to catch up with Lamar late in the season. Just didn't have that same lift on his shot. He still played incredibly fast. He's got some moves. I think he's going to be a really good player for Mississippi State in the future. Made the all-SEC all-freshman team, and I think very well deserved. But most of that was for what he did early on in the season. Like I said, the last month of the season, he kind of, you know, he struggled. He didn't really hit double figures much. I think he may only hit double figures once during the final month of the season. So I think that freshman wall sort of hit him and started to hit a lot of these freshmen. You know, Mississippi State was so young this year. But I think the future's bright. Lamar Peters, Nick Weatherspoon at point guard next year. They're going to miss the senior leadership from IJ Reddy, obviously, but there's some guys that are going to have to step up. Quindary Weatherspoon will be a junior next year. Eric Coleman will be a junior next year. So they've got a little bit of guys, you know, some guys with experience, more guys next year with experience than they had this year, obviously. And, you know, I think that this year was supposed to be a learning experience. And if you follow Ben Howland's track record, year number three, he's always taken the team to the postseason at every stop he's been. And I think Mississippi State can get to the postseason next year with the experience that they have coming back and the recruiting class that's coming in. They should be pretty good next year.
Ole Miss was also in the position of having to beat a team for the third time to advance. It was going to be either Missouri or Auburn as the first opponent for Ole Miss in Nashville. And in those games this season, the Rebels went 4-0, but won those games by only an average margin of 4 points. So very tightly contested games with Missouri and Auburn this year. Missouri kind of a surprise winner in that game. They had already fired their coach. They knew Kim Anderson would not be back. They were a team that had won only 7 games all season. But again, as I saw them against Ole Miss, a team that played hard even when they were not winning. The effort was still there, if not the execution. So they get the win over Auburn in overtime. They were actually down 7 points in that game with a minute left, came back a few minutes left, but 7 points very late. They came back and forced overtime and won in overtime. Then Ole Miss gets the win, 86-74. DeAndre Burnett was really the story for the Rebels. Didn't know if he was going to play. Thought that he would after watching him in the shoot-around. He finishes with 23 points, goes 6-for-9 from the floor, 4-for-5 from three. The Rebels got a double-double from Sebastian Saiz with 14 points and 16 rebounds. Terrence Davis came in with 19. It was a quiet 19, if you can imagine that. He really, I thought, took advantage of Missouri late in the game. That was when he got to the rim a little bit more. And, you know, you hear teams talk about legs in this tournament and the teams that are playing their second games and third games and, you know, how long can they keep their legs fresh. And, you know, you can tell it's so evident in basketball when the legs are gone and you see the jump shots come up shorter and you see the defensive footwork a little bit slower. And I thought Davis was able to take advantage of that later in the game when he got to the rim a little bit more. As things went on, the Rebels also got 11 points from Bree and Tyree. More significant from Tyree was the fact that he only had 3 turnovers, just 7 turnovers in the game for Ole Miss, while Tyree has hit some really big shots of late and has really come into his own as an offensive player down the stretch. You know, he's been good for 6 or maybe 8 turnovers in a game the last month or so as well. So just 3 turnovers for Bree and Tyree, and those were the guys with the bulk of the offense for Ole Miss. They did get 9 points from Cullen Neal. He hit 1 3-pointer and was 2 for 4 from the floor, 4 for 4 from the free throw line. 47 free throws attempted for Ole Miss in this game. Almost 50 free throws attempted off 29 fouls by Missouri. So, yeah, had Ole Miss hit those free throws at a rate that we've seen the Rebels hit many times this year, the game would have been over much earlier. But it was still a 10-point game with about 5 or 6 minutes left. You know, things can go either way at that point. But again, Missouri just did not have the legs late. Sebastian Saiz, to get his 14 points, only 1 for 6 from the floor, but 12 for 16 from the free throw line, got to the line 16 times. So Ole Miss advances to take on number 3 seed Arkansas tonight. That was not a game where the Rebels played very well during the regular season. They went to Arkansas and lost 98-80. Really let the Hogs get behind them in transition. Didn't guard transition well in that game. And it'll be Ole Miss with the legs tonight. They'll have to stay fresh. And honestly, watching Burnett, when that first shot went down, you know, he's a guy that can get on a roll. He's been really good or really bad alternately the last month or so. So it wouldn't be surprising to see him go like 2 for 13 tonight, because it's been that kind of feast or famine for Burnett the last few weeks of the regular season. So, again, Ole Miss will have to keep the legs fresh tonight against a team that will try to take advantage of that, will try to run and get out in transition. The Rebels will have to guard that fast break much better. But, you know, Andy Kennedy says this every year, that the team that has played a game in Nashville actually has an advantage because they have had some success. They have seen the ball go through the hoop. And, you know, we'll see if that plays out or if that's just coach speak to kind of get his guys to forget that they were actually playing close to midnight last night or after 11 o'clock. So anyway, we'll see how the Rebels handle Arkansas. This is a big RPI opportunity. Now, we haven't seen Ole Miss's name much at all in the national conversation. And I'm talking mostly of Jerry Palm with CBS and Joe Lunardi with ESPN. Those guys, I think one time Lunardi had them in the first 4 out, but that was several weeks ago. Not a lot of buzz for this Ole Miss team regarding the NCAA tournament. However, Kennedy and the players got here on Wednesday saying they believe that they did not have to win the tournament, but they had to get to Sunday, maybe get to the championship game, win some of these RPI opportunity games that you get if you make a deep run. And this is certainly one right now. Arkansas coming in number 26 in the ESPN simulated RPI. So we'll see if the Rebels can handle Arkansas tonight. Again, that's the late game. And Logan is actually, it was pretty good. I've never seen a late game start earlier than last night's did. You know, actually, that game, I said they were playing around 11. They were doing interviews close to that time, and the game itself was probably over at 10:15 or so. The game before Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt actually played pretty quickly, And the Ole Miss and Missouri game started probably about 10 minutes after 8. So I would love to have that situation tonight. I'm not sure it'll get there. It's been all these years, and that's the first time I've seen the late game actually start early, start at 8:10. Let's shift gears a little bit. We'll talk some baseball. Mississippi State and Ole Miss both at home this weekend. Logan, tell us about the Bulldogs.
Well, Mississippi State's one game over 500 right now, and they've got another one of those round-robin series coming in this weekend. Got Columbia coming in this weekend, and also South Alabama coming in. So they'll play, you know, four games in 3 days and kind of see how they match up in those. But, you know, for Mississippi State right now, their bullpen's been struggling. I mean, obviously it's been a struggle for them all year long in the bullpen, and they've lost, you know, out of the 68 runs Mississippi State's given up this year, 23 of those have come in the ninth inning. You know, they've gave up 10 runs to Morehead State to lose 13-8. Earlier this year, they gave up 3 runs in the eighth and ninth innings to lose to Louisiana Tech this past Tuesday. They also gave up some other runs early in the year and sent the game into extra innings. So they just haven't been able to hold them to leads, and they've also struggled with one-run games. Mississippi State, out of their 6 losses that they have this year, 4 of those have been by one run. They lost twice out at Oregon last weekend. They've also lost to Marist and Louisiana Tech by one run. So just State hadn't been able to win those close games, and obviously this is still a work in progress, obviously with a new coach. And a lot of new players that are playing for the first time. They lost 12 or 13 players off of last year's team to Major League Baseball. So that's a lot of production that they have to replace. And they've got some good young talent. Obviously, John Cohen recruited well at Mississippi State. But a lot of these players are in new roles or seeing the field for the first time. And I think they'll continue to get better. But right now, the bullpen's just really, really struggling. They've got to figure out some roles out there. So they've got some guys hurt. Ryan Rigby's been dealing with a groin injury. Blake Smith, his status for the year is kind of up in the air right now with the elbow injury. And really got to find some roles out of that bullpen right now. And Eli Marrero, the catcher, is still not going to play this weekend. He's got some off-the-field issues that he has to work out. Hadn't been with the team for the last couple of weeks and still not going to be with them this week either. So, you know, right now they're facing a South Alabama team that is 7-5 right now, but, you know, that team's averaging 9.3 runs a game. They beat a team earlier this year 32-0, and they just got through this past week beating Auburn 17-3 in 7 innings at Auburn. So this team can score a lot of runs. So Mississippi State's going to have to score a lot of runs as well, and they need some stability from their starting pitching as well. They need to shorten the game as much as they can off the mound to start the game, because, like I said, that bullpen's so shaky back here at the back end. They've got to, you know, they need some quality starts out of Connor Pilkington, Peyton Plumlee this weekend. Those are the only two starters that have been named. Mississippi State's going TBA the other two games against Columbia. Connor Pilkington will get the start tonight against South Alabama. Peyton Plumlee will get the start in the late game tomorrow, but after, you know, start against Columbia this weekend. So that's kind of where Mississippi State is right now. Rebels coming in off that Houston trip, and I know they've had a couple of midweek games.
Well, they have, Logan, and it's not a good stretch for Ole Miss right now. They split in the midweek against Georgia State. Look, we watched this team sweep East Carolina on opening weekend, come back and sweep North Carolina, Wilmington after that. A lot of excitement as it started 7-0, and you're thinking, hey, these freshmen, man, they're the real deal. And, you know, I talk all the time about the period of acclimation that all newcomers go through. And maybe these freshmen are going to be able to slide through that pretty easily. I mean, they come out of the gates with Thomas Dillard getting big hits and others making big plays and contributions, Chase Cockrell and Cole Zabowski, a lot of guys swinging the bat really well at the beginning. And while the freshmen were hitting at the beginning, the veterans, and there are a few of them, really were not. Colby Bortles and Tate Blackman getting off to slow starts at the plate, and things went from bad to worse for those guys who were suspended coming off of the Texas trip and did not play against Georgia State. Their status for this weekend against Furman has not been announced. I suspect they'll play, but Mike Bianco has not said that, and he won't. You know, you can look for that lineup on Twitter at some point, and it might include those guys, or there might be a statement made before the start of the Furman game this evening. But as of now, they're still suspended. Ole Miss really struggling offensively right now. They went out to Texas and played the three Big 12 schools. All three of them ranked, two of them in the top 10 at the time, number 10 Texas Tech, number 1 TCU. Ole Miss lost all three of those games, but pitched it really well and was competitive from that standpoint, but scored just four runs out in Texas in those three games, come back and score just one run in the two midweek games against Georgia State, winning 1-0 and losing 2-0. And so Ole Miss arrives at the weekend 8-5 overall. Remember, they had a 7-0 start. The Rebels have scored just five runs in their last 47 innings. They're hitting .252. Those freshmen who were hitting so well at the beginning have all slipped back a little bit. Zabowski leads the team at .316. A .316 average leads the team. Blackman, who got off to the slow start, played better in Texas. He's hitting .316 as well. Those are the only two guys hitting above .300. Will Golson, who hit well on opening weekend and also against Wilmington, hitting at .286 right now. Cockrell's .267. Ryan Olenek has slipped back. Thomas Dillard was hitting .500 for several games. He's at .250. You know, this has to change. It doesn't matter how well you pitch if you can't score. And the Rebels have pitched it very, very well. So Furman coming in, an FBS. Look, if you're talking football here, Furman is an FCS opponent, the former 1AA. All that goes out the window for baseball. But Furman gets to Oxford at 8-4 with series wins against Dayton and Monmouth. You may remember Monmouth from one of the regionals Ole Miss hosted several years ago. The Paladins, this being Furman, also have lost single games to Michigan State, 3-2, and to Butler, 10-7. They come in hitting .317 as a team, scoring 7.7 runs a game. Their best guy is outfielder Landon Kay, who is hitting .400 with three doubles, two home runs, and 14 RBIs. For Ole Miss, obviously, they have to get the bats going better this weekend. They've got to hit. They've got to get on base and drive the runs home. But the pitching has been very good, and they need that to be consistent. David Parkinson, you know, got hit a little bit out in Texas against Baylor, but he comes in with a very solid ERA at let me find it here, folks. Don't go away. David Parkinson, 2-1, a 3.71 ERA. The guy who's gotten off to a really good start on the mound, James MacArthur, the number two starter. Didn't really know what you were going to see out of him, but he looks like maybe he's going to make a big year one to year two jump. He showed some stuff last year, really flashed in the non-conference, had some nice games against Southern Miss and Memphis. Didn't fare that well against the SEC last season, so we'll see if MacArthur can pitch well again this weekend and then carry that on into conference play, which begins the following weekend. But right now, MacArthur in 15 and the third innings, a 1.76 ERA. So pitching really well at the beginning, James MacArthur. The Rebels have been a little less dynamic in that third Sunday spot with Brady Feigl, a converted reliever. Remember, he pitched some big innings out of the bullpen last year. As a redshirt freshman, he may be headed back there. A 6.00 ERA in 15 innings. It will not be surprising to see a change there this weekend. Maybe it's Feigl, maybe it's someone else. But the guy to watch now, to really watch for that third SEC spot, is going to be freshman Will Etheridge, who really has gotten off to a nice start right now as the non-conference midweek starter. But he's thrown 15.2 innings with a 1.15 ERA and 26 strikeouts to two walks for Will Etheridge to begin his career. 26 strikeouts, two walks, 15 and two-thirds innings. So it would not be surprising to see him get an opportunity soon in the weekend rotation. Spring football, Logan, we got a couple of minutes left. You know, I've seen Ole Miss just a little bit, nothing really standing out. Something I've kind of kept an eye on for spring is how are these receivers catching the ball from Shea Patterson, because that was a topic at the end of the year. Patterson started the last three games. They go on the road with him and win his first start at Texas A&M. And, you know, you saw him miss some passes, and then you saw him get better as the game went on. And you really thought they would build off of that and maybe finish strong in the last two games. But they go to Vanderbilt, and all of a sudden, a lot more dropped passes by these receivers. Hugh Freeze said he counted 10 in that game, and that carried over a little bit against Mississippi State. Now, the dropped passes were not the reason necessarily that the Rebels lost 52-20 in the regular season finale. Now, there was team-wide dysfunction that day, but dropped passes by this receiving group, which I think is very, very good, very talented and athletic, and you can see that. How will they get their timing with Shea Patterson this spring? Will they begin to catch most balls that come their way, as you expect of this group? And right now, from what we're seeing, I think you could say that it's better, but it's not where it needs to be. So that's something to keep an eye on as spring moves along for Ole Miss.
Yeah, and for Mississippi State, I haven't seen them very much at all. In fact, the only time I saw them was 20 minutes on Tuesday. I think that was their third or fourth practice already this spring, and that was the first one that was open to the media, and we basically got to see them stretch and run through a couple of drills, no scrimmaging that we were able to watch. I'm hoping that we'll be able to watch their first full team scrimmage here in a couple of weeks. They usually have two team scrimmages leading up into the third team scrimmage, which is the spring game, which will be early in April this year. So we'll kind of know a little bit more about the team at that time. But, you know, when I was out there Tuesday, I was really looking at the 13 newcomers that were coming in, 9 junior college transfers, 4 early high school graduates, kind of getting that first look at those guys in a Mississippi State uniform. Obviously, Keaton Thompson was a key focus, you know, the high school quarterback, the Louisiana Player of the Year. At that position, obviously going into the season, he's going to be the number two quarterback for Mississippi State, right behind Nick Fitzgerald. And Thompson looks the part. He's a really tall guy, about 6'5", probably about, you know, kind of a lean 220, really tall guy. I mean, he looks almost as big as Fitzgerald at this point, coming straight out of high school. Obviously looks the part. Didn't get to see him throw too much, a few passing drills here and there. We'll kind of have to see, you know, how he does. But one thing Dan Mullen made clear is the quarterbacks would not be hit this spring, and that's a total change from last year. The quarterbacks were live the entire spring last year when they were trying to find a starter. Had 4 guys competing for that starting job last spring, so every one of those quarterbacks were live. Not going to even be able to sniff or breathe on the quarterback this spring, so those guys are going to be protected. They know who their starter is going to be in Nick Fitzgerald. He won that job last year, but you'll kind of have to see how they do from here on out. The thing is they're going to take the entire week off next week for spring break. So nothing new. It'll be another couple of weeks before I be able to see the football team again. But I guess the focus next week, Parrish, will be on the women's basketball team. You know, they'll find out their NCAA destination on Monday. The last projection I saw, Mississippi State would be a number 2 seed in the tournament in the Oklahoma City regional. So we'll have to see if that projection leads up. But Mississippi State should host the first 2 rounds here in Starkville starting next weekend.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, coming to you every Wednesday and Friday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. And check out Prep Rally with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps for all your high school sports needs. A lot of state tournament coverage coming to you in Prep Rally right now. That big event winding down down in Jackson. Logan and I will be back here with you next week, Thursday or Friday, for another round of Double Coverage.